Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their insights, and their expertise to help founders in tech grow their businesses. My name is Gary Lafter, your host and creator of Authority Accelerators, where we take tech leaders and founders and elevate them over and above their expert level into the authority status, where they are now chosen as the preferred person to do business with. On this episode, I'm extremely pleased and happy to have Angelo Rodriguez, and we're going to be talking about old school marketing in this busy AI world, as well as networking and partnerships. So without further ado, Angelo, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on this episode. Why don't we start off by giving yourself a quick introduction of who you are and what you actually do.
Awesome. Thanks, Gary. Really, really happy to be on the podcast. Angelo Rodriguez, I'm the VP of go-to-market for ZeroTier. We are a software-defined mesh VPN network provider. And so Series A startup, we've been around for a little while here, and I've been with the company for about 2 years. So really happy to be on the podcast, man.
Well, it's great to have you here, Angelo. And the very first question I have for you is that, obviously, when we've talked before, you come from a very corporate background, you know, a Fortune 50 company, and now you're with a startup. That's got to be some kind of transition. What was it that went through your mind when you're thinking, I'm leaving this big behemoth of a company and moving into the startup world? How did that feel?
Oh my gosh, man, that was it was a little nerve-wracking, I think. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, you spend all this time. I spent, you know, 10 plus years at, you know, at Verizon, worked through a lot of, you know, various groups, you know, running SaaS and you know, some cybersecurity teams, and really kind of worked my way up, right? Kind of started from the bottom and working my way up every 2 years or so, right? Like stepping into a new position, and made it to a, you know, senior director, kind of executive level, and was approached to take on this opportunity to build the go-to-market motion for this Series A tech startup. And it was, I mean, honestly, Gary, very, it was nerve-wracking for me. I kind of think of myself as like an intrapreneur, right? So I was a person that frequently would jump in and say, hey, how do we stand up something new or bring a new product to market? And what's the right way to position these products? What kind of team resources do we need? And so that part of it, I think really the part of like having a startup that, you know, you can build something from the ground up really resonated with me. But of course, there's that fear. I think anyone going from like a Fortune 50 or Fortune 500 to a startup has the same kind of questions. Will I have enough support? You know, do we have enough resources? You know, what does that go-to-market motion look like when you're really, really resource constrained? But man, I will tell you, it has been such a positive experience. I think being able to kind of put your fingerprint on something, right? It's like, this is mine. I can build this from the ground up and kind of build the team has been amazing. I'll tell you, and I know we've talked about this, but having gone from huge company to startup, I don't know that I'd ever go back to a big company again. There's just so much more excitement, right, in the startup world. But, you know, as you know, it's not without its, you know, the bumps in the road, the pains, the moments where you're like, man, like, is this, am I getting this right? Like, am I, you know, you go through all those feelings, you know, where you're like, it's working, it's not working, it's working, and just muscling through it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a tremendous mind shift as well. As you said, there's the nervousness of it, there's the emotion of it. But once your feet touch the ground, you get your legs under the desk, it's then the mind shift, isn't it? That mind shift that you have to think, okay, I don't have this exorbitant budget to deal with now. I'm quite restrained here with a startup because obviously this is the future. So that being said, you're at a startup. There's going to be founders listening to this podcast, to this episode. They're going to be in a very similar position. And as we know, especially in the tech world, that they have this attitude of this belief, as it were, that if I build it, they will come. You know, this field of dreams. This is my baby. This is so good. Blah, 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 blah. You know, and all I've got to do is make this better, and then people will flock to us. And we both know that doesn't work. It's not the right way. How did you approach this go-to-market strategy then with someone like ZeroTier? You know, they've got something fantastic out there in the marketplace. What shifts had to be made? So, you know, to get it back out there in the marketplace rather than just wait for it to come in.
Sure. I mean, there was a lot of work when I first started with ZeroTier. I think a lot of what I had to do was really kind of dig in and understand who is the customer? And so I think where a lot of founders get tripped up is you build this product. To your point, it's like, hey, I built this great product and I expect people to just come to me, right? If I put something out in the world that's fantastic, people will just start flooding in. That's not normally how it works. It almost never works that way. And I think also there is this gap or opportunity in really understanding what is the problem that you're solving. And so when I first came to Zero Tier, that's really what I wanted to kind of get my head around. Having been in the networking space for a long time, I had a sense of what the problem was. That's what attracted me to come to Zero Tier. I'm thinking this is a radically different way to solve private networking, but I needed to hear it from the customers. I mean, you know, as a go-to-market guy, like you need to kind of get in and meet with people and really hear from them, what are the problems that you're facing? What are the problems that need to get solved? And so really my first 60 days or so were just going out and reaching, meeting with as many prospects and customers as humanly possible to understand what brought you to Zero Tier, what about Zero Tier gained your interest? Kind of walk me through a day in the life. Like what's a day in the life for you? What are the things that keep you up at night? And through that process of kind of really honing in on the problems that, you know, individuals, decision makers in IT and cybersecurity, what they face, we were able to kind of craft that, you know, what our go-to-market needed to look like. And then really identifying where do you want to play, right? So, you know, Zero Tier, we're kind of in the middle of this transition. So 2 years in, identifying where you want to play. What I mean by that is, you know, what are the segments? So what's that profile? You know, ICP, but beyond just, you know, who is the individual? What's the persona? It's the segment. So is it small business? Is it medium business? Is it enterprise? For us, at the stage, the maturity of the product, at that the maturity level we were at, small to medium made the most sense, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't have everything at the time that an enterprise would be looking for, but we solved a lot of real problems. And the things that we could solve, we did exceptionally well. And so really honing in on the problems that we solve, who is it for? What's the right segment to be going after? And then we started to kind of build the go-to-market plan around that. How do we attract those types of customers? What are the things we have to say in, you know, our website, our marketing site, in our collateral? What are the things we need to say, the words we have to use in our outbound messaging and presentations? And that was kind of laying the foundation, the groundwork. And then it was building the team, right? So you can't do it by yourself.
No, once exactly.
You kind of honed in on the pieces that have to be in place, the problems that we solve, gathering product requirements, then it was building a team. So I started to pull in, I take pride, I think, as a leader, and I think all good leaders do this. You kind of build your tribe, right? Mm-hmm. You kind of, as you go through your career and you mentor people and, you know, you give a lot of yourself to try to help people to level up in their career, you tend to build a lot of loyalty. People who are like, you know what, I'd follow you anywhere you go. Mm-hmm. And so I've taken a lot of pride in being able to do that, pulled in some resources from, you know, other teams that I've managed. And then we're a startup, right? So I think anyone who's in this space knows you're building the plane while you're flying it. So we tested things quickly. I had this theory. I think this could work. I tested in like a 2-week sprint. I don't, did it work? Did it not work? Should we double down or should we try something else? So I'm not sure that fully answered your question, but that's kind of how we approach it.
And it was so much that I really want to go back and start unpacking some of it.
Please.
Because it was just so much you gave there as in insights worth that we kind of jumped around as well. So let me just dial it back a little bit.
Sure.
And let's talk about, you know, going out there and finding out what they actually want. And one of the things that really perks my ears all the time, as you well know, because we talk about this all the time, is be solution and outcome driven first. In tech, it's really, we tend to build upwards and say, right, we start from here and then we start figuring out how our product works and we get up and up, as opposed to the opposite round, which is far, far more effective, is say, what is the solution and the problem we solve? What is the outcome they want? Now let's build it around that. Because people generally, if you want to have business, they'll buy because of one of three things. They'll either, does it make me money? Does it save money? Does it keep me out of jail? All right.
Right.
So in business, one of these problems that I can solve and then work backwards from there. So this was a great, you gave a good example of that. is like going out there and finding out what is this problem. I suppose the question I want to ask from that particular perspective is that when you think about networking, people would generally talk about companies like the big boys like Cisco, etc. How are you standing out there? Because you have these big names. You obviously, like every other industry, we have our big four or five in that industry, and then we have the rest. Or at least that's the perception out there. They've got the big boys and then the rest. So what are you doing? What are you guys doing to make sure you stand out above all that noise?
Yeah, I mean, every company kind of faces this challenge, right? Especially in the startup space, when you're coming into a market that is mature, where you have these huge gorillas in this space, Cisco's, Fortinet's, and all of these folks. The way that we kind of position ourselves, and this has really resonated with customers, is saying, look, I'm not going to go head to head with Cisco because that's not a fight that I'm going to win, right? They've got an infinite budget. And so we had to be really prescriptive about the things, really hone in on the things that we do that are radically different from a Cisco or a Fortinet. And so the way that we catch people's attention is to say, look, you know what networking looks like with these market leaders. And the way that those legacy networks are built have inherent challenges. The idea is like they were not built for the modern way of working. Mm. And so the pitch for us is there is a better, simpler, more scalable way to do this that's completely software defined. And once people start to kind of hear that, it's a mental shift, right? It's kind of getting them to understand like this was kind of the old way of doing things. There is a new, and that old way of doing things causes these problems, right? It's like, this is how networking worked before. The consequence of that is, right, it takes more time, it costs more money, it takes more people resources to go out and fix things when they don't work. It's hardware, the hardware is expensive. There are more modern, better ways to do this and serve your customers. And that message resonates because it speaks to a real problem, right? The problem is like, it costs me a ton of money. It's hard. It takes a lot of time. And so it's like, save time, save money, simple and fast to deploy, kind of checks a lot of those boxes.
Yeah, that's a really good point. As I say, we evolve. Tech by its very nature is an evolving industry. It's always constantly changing. Yet we're always surprised when we go and find companies who still want to do it the old way because that's the way it's always been done. Yeah. And they haven't technologically moved forward from that. With that being said, I suppose that leads on to a really great question is that you've obviously had the enterprise background. You've got a startup background right now where you're doing. From the people you're seeing, what is one of the biggest mistakes founders are actually making today? From trying to, lean over their skis too much. There's many ones that they're making. But what would you say is one of the biggest mistakes founders are making out there when they come to market?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I think that the biggest thing that I see, and candidly, we have also fallen into this trap, right? So it's, I try to be as transparent as possible because I've made mistakes along the way and I think we all have. That's part of business. Is not really being specific and intentional about who you're going after. Because as a startup, you don't have infinite resources, right? A Cisco or a Verizon or, a Palo Alto, they can afford to be everything to everyone. Mm. When you're a startup and you don't have infinite resources, you have to really hone in on what is the segment, what's that persona, where can I bring the most value with the limited resources that I have? You kind of test it, you benchmark kind of that success. Am I getting the traction that I need? And then you continue to make investments if so. And if not, you kind of have to come back to the drawing board and say, am I going after the right thing? Maybe my theory was incorrect. Maybe there's not enough of a market opportunity here, or it's not a big enough problem that it's compelling for people to want to give us a try because it's a risk on both sides, right? Starting being a founder, being an entrepreneur, you take a lot of risk in bringing something new to market, but you have to also recognize that your customer is taking a risk, right? They're betting on you, knowing that 6 months from now, maybe your company doesn't even exist. So I think that the biggest thing that I see is not having a good understanding of the problem that I'm solving and who is it solving, who needs to have that problem solved. And really narrowing the scope. Because if you don't do that, I see it a million times. you start to kind of spiral out into all these other areas. And the next thing you know, you're like, how did I get this?
Yeah, well, that's a fascinating way to look at it. And I love the analogy that you just gave there of this spider web and the mess, because, you know, especially in tech, there's this mentality that we must fix things. And therefore, it's complete opposite to what you've just said. You've just said, listen, there's not enough of these guys who are standing in the client's boots. If you're standing in their boots, it's not about you running off and fixing a problem. It's how do you make me feel better about who I am as a client,
right,
and the problem that I have, as opposed to being completely two different things. So that's a really fascinating thing. And I think if there's one thing that people should pick up from that, from this episode, it'll be that it's not standing in the shoes and not just running around trying to solve problems all the time. So let's shift along about now with a startup, because it doesn't matter how good your startup is, it doesn't matter your product or your service or how well you know your client. If you can't get your client to do work with you, you become the best kept secret out there. So you've kind of gone out there and kind of pioneered and a great advocate for this freemium model. You know, and this freemium model that you're doing, you know, you're bringing in tens of thousands of organic signups per month. You know, and people are going to be out there and go, oh my goodness, how they're going to do that? But isn't that just a load of stuff coming out? So let's talk about this, and I want to break it down into a couple of things. What is it? Let's define your freemium. What is it that you actually do? And then, yes, you are getting the numbers through, but then how do you do the qualification of it? Because obviously, we all know if you're going to throw a lot of stuff against the wall, not everything's going to stick for good. Right. So let's talk about this freemium model. What is it and what are you actually doing? And then how do you actually break this down into having your effectively qualified or ABC of clients?
Sure. So the way that freemium works for us is we have a service, right? This private network, a VPN replacement platform, but it serves the challenge that we were just talking about is, like, you know, when you're going too wide, it's almost like this Swiss Army knife of networking tools. And the kind of consequence of that is you kind of cast this really wide net. We give it away for free because we say, look, if you have a small deployment, we want you as a startup, we know that we don't have the brand recognition. And so we really need the product to speak for itself. And the best way we've found to do that is to give it away and say, look, if it's really, really small, it's a very small deployment, then here, you can have it and it's free. And in reality, that's intentional because we don't have the resources to go chase super, super small, like micro-sized deployments. And really, we're focused on business. And so this freemium model, this basic plan, allows individuals, hobbyists, prosumers, and like micro SMB to come in the door and test the product. And I look at this, I think founders, everyone has a different model for this PLG, right? Product-led growth. I don't look at freemium necessarily as being, I'm casting this wide net and I need to convert a percentage of those to be able to hit a number. I look at freemium as a way for me to really drive top of funnel and get people excited about the product. So it's marketing more than anything, right? Mm-hmm. Getting your name out, it kind of goes, if the product is good, then people are telling their friends are telling their friends. You kind of build that kind of network effect, right? So you cast a wide net, you give the product away for free, then, and feel free to stop me because I'm going to jump to the next point that you had, I think was around, how do you kind of think about like scoring these? How do you qualify, kind of bring them down, right? And so in the early days when I started, we didn't really have a lot of tools to help us with this. And so it was a little painful to say, I've got this wide net that I'm casting. I have this huge base of people who are raving about us, but you know, you're looking at the data, you're exporting into Excel, and it was ugly, right? It's startup stuff. You're like looking through and trying to find people who are in the right industry. Over time, we were able to bring in better tooling. I think for startups, this is really important because when you don't have the people, you have to be really smart about the tools that you use that allow you to move faster. And so for us, it was implementing things like HubSpot for CRM, using things like Clearbit, which is now part of HubSpot, for enrichment. And so now I can say, I know who's coming in the front door. I can enrich that data. So I know I'm looking for small to medium businesses in this segment, right? Manufacturing, transportation, et cetera. I get all that data and now we can score those leads. Mm-hmm. So we can say, look, I know who's coming in. I've identified people because again, back to the first point, we've identified who is our ICP, who are we going after, where can we win? and we spend our time on those leads. So
yeah.
Freemium, I think, works. We could talk a little bit. I don't want to monologue here, but we could talk a bit about like how and where freemium works. And there are a lot of traps.
I want to move on to the next stage because freemium model, is, as I said, it's a very effective model. As I say, that top of funnel, getting that brand recognition out there, standing out, because obviously you want people to say, well, whoa, who are these guys? Where do they come from? What do they actually do? Right. So it's really powerful to get it out there. And as you say, as it goes through time, we talk about ICPs, but we also talk about the ABC of clients, you know, who's actually going to stick with you or who's just coming in, trying, dipping the toe in the water and going. And we talk about what is the big Mac of the product suite where that drives 80%, but also there are clients out there as well. Who is the what is your ICP? Which one is your big Mac? Are giving you the most revenue,
right?
And taking up the least amount of time or resources, you know? So you always have that thing. But moving on from that sort of blanket freemium model, the next ones that you're actually doing to great effect now is partnerships, is channel partnerships, is getting out there and being a new focus for you. What advice or insights can you give for those who are listening here and going, yes, I keep meaning to start doing this channel partnership thing, getting out there? What kind of insights would you share if someone's thinking about that and what should they do about it?
Yeah, I think that you know, the decision about whether or not to go the channel partnership route, in my experience, is a question that you want to ask yourself really early and make a decision on as early as possible. I wasn't with ZeroTier when they started, right? When the company was founded. I think if I was, I mentioned this to you, I would have probably gone channel first. If the segment that you're going after is enterprise, especially, channel makes a lot of sense in many cases. Because the startup, to break into enterprise sales, you're trying to go after these big names, these big logos. You don't have the brand. You don't have the name. A lot of these companies, like anyone, right? Any business, any person likes to work with people they know. And so the value that a lot of channel partners bring is they have relationships with the types of customers that you want to be able to provide your product to. And so that relationship is really important. They can bring a lot of value, so value-added services that you don't have the scale or potentially expertise to be able to do. And so I would say first, it's identifying, is channel right for the segment that I'm going after? And the further you go up market, probably the more that makes sense. And then what value can these partners bring in this? And what value can I bring to them in this partnership? Do they have the relationships with the customers that I'm trying to go after? And if the answer is yes to those things, then I would honestly recommend that you invest in channel, but understand that channel is not, founders, I think, make the mistake of thinking, oh, I have these channel partners and they're just, the leads are going to come flowing in. Like, all I have to do is meet Gary, shake his hand, say, I've got this cool thing. And next thing I know, Gary, go do your job and I'll wait for the money. And it's just not how it works, right? It's like, it's an investment. You're investing in a relationship. You want them to feel warm and fuzzy about doing business with you. And I found that the best way to do that is to lead with giving. If I want you to bring me deals and leads, I should bring you deals and leads, right? Like, I'm making that first step. I'm investing in this partnership and proving that there is value in us doing business together. And I think that starts to become reciprocal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm hearing this time and time again, so I'm really glad that you brought this up. Partnerships is not one way. It's not a one-way street. It's a two-way street, always. And however you cut up the cake, there's always got to be, or the pie or whatever, there's always got to be the reciprocal way of thing. And I love what you just said there. Let's offer first. Let's be the ones who's stepping out there. Offer first, give them value, and then see what comes back. So I quickly want to jump onto the number three of getting out there. We've talked about the freemium model, so sort of the blanket approach. Now we've talked about, you know, far more defined partnership approach and channel partnership from that. And we can't really talk about sales and marketing, lead generation in tech without talking about AI.
That's right. Yeah,
we just can't do that because it's just there.
It's everywhere.
If there's VCs listening, they're going to go, yeah, of course, you know, because they just want to have an AI element to everything. Pretty sure everyone listening gets their email box flooded with these AI bot messages coming through, emails, LinkedIn messages. It's just the complete farce of stuff coming through from that. And we all know it's there, and we just put them into junk box or delete them or whatever. And it's actually becoming more of a pain than it is a pleasure. But that being said, AI is here to stay. AI is here to grow. Sure. You know, and this, we just got to be smarter about it. So what advice do you think you would give some a founder here or an executive here who wants to use AI in their marketing for efficiency, but would also want to have the personal element to it as well?
Yeah. I mean, look, to your point, AI is everywhere. I think all of us get bombarded with people trying to sell us things. And sometimes it's you know, we're getting AI messaging from companies that are trying to sell us AI products. And I think that it starts with, you know, understanding where AI brings value. And so as a go-to-market leader, we use AI extensively. So I'll start there. Where AI, I think, brings a lot of value, AI tools are in things like, I think of AI as like it's a research assistant, right? It helps me with organizing data. It helps me to make decisions faster and to summarize information because it's information overload, right? Especially in tech, there's so many things coming your way. And like, how do you parse through that? AI can be a force multiplier there. Where I think, you know, things start to kind of fall apart is when founders look at AI as a way to replace people because like, oh, I don't need SDRs. Or I don't need account executives. Like, I can set this up for a multi-touch sequence and it's like spray and pray, right? Or scorched earth. And it just doesn't work. Because what's happening, you know, to your question was like, we're all being bombarded with it, which means then that it just becomes noise, right? Mm. And so I see all these LinkedIn posts, all these go-to-market gurus, and they're saying, look, I set up this email sequence and I'm sending 4,000 emails a day. And I got, you know, 5 meetings out of this. I'm like, that's not success. That's bad. That's actually really bad. Right? Because you're sending these generic messages. Most of them are going to spam. The reason you have to use like multiple email addresses and aliases is because you're spamming people, right? And it's no one wants that. What people want is a personal touch. What you get from having a person on your team is that kind of human insight. I'm researching. I'm trying to understand where I can bring unique value to this person. And thus far, AI is not that great at that. It's good at distilling information. It's good at finding some interesting angles. Not so good at understanding the nuances of sales. It is part art and science. Founders tend to think it's just science. Yeah. So you really, I mean, if people get nothing out of this from what I'm saying about AI, I would just say use AI to allow you to work faster and smarter and delegate busy work to AI because that is helpful, even for account executives. Research accounts, look at this company's filing and give me 3 or 4 interesting things I could talk about in a sales conversation. That's amazing. It's so good at that. Don't use it as a way to, you know, scorched earth, burn through all of your leads because leads aren't, you know this, I mean, leads aren't infinite, right? It's not an infinite supply and you do brand damage. I would rather say, especially in enterprise, focus on 10 to 20 leads that you're going deep and wide on. I'm looking for the right decision makers. I'm looking for people where I can bring unique value than to send 5,000 leads, an infinite number of messages and hoping that, you know, a handful of those convert. It's a bad idea.
Yeah.
And it will hurt us in the long term.
Yeah, exactly. Short term, it saves you time, but long term, and I love what you just said there, you know, it hurts the brand. It really does hurt the brand because, yeah, you're just hitting people at the wrong time. There's other ways of doing it. But, you know, AI can be, we use AI a lot through our marketing and emails, but there is a personal touch behind it. It is like, you know, it's not just about trying to get a bot to sell you straight away or trying to sell from the message straight away because that is spamming. It really is. It's the wrong way to do things.
You bring up a point about, you know, adding a personal touch, I think is really important. And then I should say that, especially for outreach, right? That first touch, that human element is so important. Where we found it useful is on the marketing side, things like keeping people warm with new information, updates, things like that, super helpful for that. Super helpful for that. If you're trying to get someone in the door and really start the relationship off on the right foot, I would, as much of a human element as possible, will cut through the noise. Otherwise, people are just going to ignore us. We're killing ourselves, really, as go-to-market people.
And as you said, it's like we talked about earlier about how do you cut through the noise with so much going out there now, en masse, like you said, it's just more noise now. So you've got to do something different to cut through that. And I love that. So listen, I've got one final question for you. You've shared so much insight with us today. You know, I'm going to thank you for that. But if you had to distill everything that we discussed today, right, into one message for those listening today, what would that be?
Oh, boy. I mean, I think if I were to distill all of this, you know, down to one thing, I would say relationships, real UN relationships, that's the thing that is going to drive results for you. So how you build those relationships, how you nurture those relationships, whether it's partners or customers or VCs, really, really, really matters. And if you're really good at building those relationships, those people can be a multiplier for you because they will help drive business to you, whether directly or indirectly. Product's important, marketing's important, all of these things we talked about are important, but your ability to build relationships with the right people, the right customers, the right partners is critical. So invest in those skills for yourself as a founder and in finding people who can help you do that at scale.
Well, that's a wonderful place to end. What a great piece of advice for that. Andrew, thank you very much for joining us today. And, you know, and I really appreciate all the insights and expertise and tips that you've shared with us today. It's been an absolute honor having you here today.
Awesome. Thanks. You too, man. Thanks for having me.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us on another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast. Listen, if you've taken anything from this episode, as always, make sure you like it, make sure you comment, and maybe you share some of the stuff that you've learned today. Some of the stuff that Andrew shared with us today so that other people can all grow as well. So until the next episode, thank you very much for joining us. Andrew, it's been great. We'll catch up with you soon. All the best. Sounds good. And we'll see you guys on the next episode. Goodbye.